The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good day, listeners. I'm glad you could join me today, October 19th, 2013. It's a beautiful, sunny fall day where I live. Now, the ADL turns 100 years old tomorrow, and maybe we'll have some time to talk about that later in the program. But I don't want to hold up my guest, who I'm very pleased to announce is Gunter Deckert from Germany, and he has quite a history, which maybe we'll go over with him just a little bit as soon as I introduce him. And so I've already done that, so it's a great pleasure to have you on the show again, Gunter.
Yeah. Okay. So am I.
Okay. And I was going to say you were the last time you were on this show. It was July 13th. It was just about 3 months ago.
Yeah.
So, and so before we get started, let's just go over your history just a little bit. I was going to say that you were born in Germany in the Rhineland in 1940, and
no.
So you no
Heidelberg. It's not the Rhineland.
Oh, it's not the Rhineland.
No, it's the Palatinate.
Yeah, see how ignorant I am. You'd think I'd know by now, but
Heidelberg.
I just,
Heidelberg. Yes, Heidelberg's in the Palatinate.
Okay, well, what's considered the Rhineland then?
Goes Mainz, Koblenz, Cologne. That's the Rhineland.
Oh, it's further north.
Yes, that's a beautiful Rhine Valley.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Further north, about 100 kilometers north from Weinheim, where I live.
Well, see, it's a good thing. It's a good thing I'm doing this with you, not doing it by myself. All right, yes. but you did live through the war until you're 5 years old, and then the terrible post-war period and the denazification and all that. But it still didn't stop you from becoming a nationalist once you got old enough to think for yourself, right?
That's it.
And even though you had become a school teacher as a profession, you joined the NPD, which was the Nationalist Party in Germany, which is an old party and goes way back. And it's been around all these years, and now they suddenly think that they should try to ban it. Of course, they did try that once before, but you know they want to portray it as so dangerous. We'll get into some of those things later, I hope. And you eventually became the president or the leader, whatever that's called, of that party. And I think that was in 1990, right?
1991.
One year later. Yeah, okay. And in this capacity, you were cooperating to some degree at times with the Holocaust revisionist scholars, and this was the reason that the Thought Police brought charges, trumped up charges against you. And since then, you have had spent quite a number of years in prisons of the Federal Republic, right?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and so it really wasn't so much about the NPD, but as soon as you touched Holocaust, they come right down on you, and yet you continue to speak out. You've continued to be a supporter for truth, and I say that you are dedicated to restoring the true Germany.
Thank you.
Okay. And you are one of the few who doesn't hide that and who speaks right out about it. And so many people today who are in Europe, they say, well, you know, it's against the law in my country, so I can't talk about it. But you do talk about it, and you certainly paid a price for it, but you take it all very well. You're very good-natured about everything. So from there, why don't you get us up to date with what you've been doing since July when you were here last? Anything you want to share with us?
Well, from July to up, I traveled a lot. I had some political meetings as to the national elections in September, and I worked up my mail that had heaped up after my 5 months of prison from January to May. Mm-hmm. And I'm preparing my memory, my prison memories, which take a lot of time to get through. And I hope they will be published by Christmas or at the beginning of the next year.
Oh, great. Great. Well, you know, I was going to say that that you don't have a website. You don't keep a website or anything for people to go to. So where is the best place for people to find out about you? Of course, you do have a Wikipedia page people can read.
Well, I'm not in favor of what you call a blog. It takes a lot of time to have the actual comments. And I had to some, let's say, topics, I had to consult a lawyer before, and that costs a lot of money. And though I prefer sending round reports I get, or I send round letters to the editors or some, well, smaller political articles to a certain circle. Well, I've got an English one for revisionists, and I've got 3 ones for German-speaking people, which are, well, political everyday topics, immigration, asylum seekers, criminality, and so on. But no blog.
Right, right. Well, I think you're smart in that. Well, if people would want to be on your mailing list, would you
They should write me. Yes. Okay. Yeah. No okay. problem.
All
yes,
right. And you address. Would. Yeah. What is that? Your email address?
Günter, Günter, full stop, Deckert, Deckert, at GMX, full stop, DE.
Yeah. GMX.
GMX. DE. Yep.
That's
right. It. All right. And they should tell me if they understand a bit of German. Otherwise, they will only get the English messages I send around.
Right. I wish I could be on your German email list. Well, all right. The election in September. What you wanted to talk about that a little bit, or you said you could talk about it. So what's going on with that?
First, here in Weinheim and area, that's the Palatinate, we had a fine Indian summer day. Sunny, a bit fresh. And in German, we don't call it Indian summer, Indiana summer, but old lady summer. Old ladies summer. Well, a nice day in the Heidelberg area, and I was away in the Westerwald, which is east of Koblenz. That's near the Rhine Valley. I had to see a friend. Well, the so-called national elections taking place in September brought some surprises, I would say. The most important one is that the liberals are not any longer part of the German Reichstag. I predicted that we would have a new big coalition, what they call Große Koalition, that is the bourgeois union, institutional union, social union, and the socialists. And I was right, because as the FDP had to leave the Bundestag, there's only one possibility for the CDU and its partner, the CSU in Bavaria, to make up a coalition government with the SPD, the Socialists of Germany. Mathematically, there would be possible a coalition of red, red, green, that is, socialists, greens, and communists. They have a majority of votes in the Bundestag. So they don't have a majority of voters behind them. I think I have to explain the German voting system. It's a bit different from what you know in the States or maybe in France or in Britain. On the national level, the voter has got 2 votes. One for the candidate in its home constitution, Constitution Z, and the second one for a list on the level of the different provinces or states. They didn't get a choice first to say, well, my first vote goes to the candidate which has most chances to get elected. And with the second vote, I choose the party I'm in favor of. And I will give the results. Maybe your listeners don't know them or have forgotten them. The union called CDU and CSU made 41.5. That is, the socialists, 25.7. The communists, 8.6, the Greens 8.4, and the Liberals 4.8, which means not anymore in the Reichstags, because there's a barrier of 5%. Otherwise, you won't have deputies, you won't have members of parliament. And it's interesting that the union, CDU-CSU, almost had the majority of seats, which is the result of the German election system, which is different from the French one or the British one. Because in Britain, the candidate with most votes in his constituency gets the seat and the others no chance. In Germany, with the list on the level of the provinces or states or Länder, if you call it, well, you've got a second chance. Now, to those parties below 5%, that is, I said already, the Liberals, for the first time after the foundation of the Federal Republic, they are not part of the German Reichstag or the German Bundestag. And behind them are a kind of populist movement founded by former CDU members called Alternative for Germany, that made 4.7%, not in the Bundestag. And with the other parties you mentioned, for example, the party I voted for, the NPD, always more or less the same well as 4 years before, but now at 1.3. Ew. And yes, 1.3 only, but that means they get money from the state.
Okay.
With 0.5, you are entitled to get money from a certain fund. That means about between 2 to 5 million euros a year, which is very important for the structure and for the, let's say, the of the party to pay for elections, to pay for leaflets and so on. And there are two smaller right-wing parties, one which had been very, very successful years ago, that is the Republikaner, but this time they only made 0.2. Figure out, in the diet of Baden-Württemberg, they had two times a fraction with more than 8% of the votes. And the second one is, well, it's called For Germany or Pro Germany. They also made only 0.2. And the party called the Free Voters, in German, Freie Wähler, which made 9% in the last Bavarian election, only made 0.9%. You see, the parties outside what I call the Berlin system were not successful.
Let me ask you to describe the difference between the liberals and the social democrats. I mean, which is more liberal?
Well, liberals and social democrats, well, it's a big gap, I would say. Liberals are for Manchester liberalism. That's his free trade and things like that. And the socialists in Germany are very, very near to the communists, more state. I would say it's like we're in the States, the Obama government is more state, want more state, while the liberals don't want.
All right. So the liberals are for less government.
That's it. Yes.
And Germany is a country that's always been pretty government heavy. I mean, that's not a good choice of words, but you know, strong government.
Liberals are for free religion, everything that the state or the government shouldn't rule, shouldn't dictate. They will stand.
What we call libertarians.
Oh, yes, that's possibly a libertarian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's more or less it was a party of what they call the middle class, the bourgeois, merchants, craftsmen, lawyers, and things like that, doctors, professors. Mm-hmm. And now these people changed their minds. I don't know why. And maybe it's interesting to see what how the voters changed their minds compared to the last election in 2009. I'll give some numbers. The CDU-CSU got 200,010 from the socialists. a win. That is, Social Democrats this time voted the Merkel Party. But the Merkel Party got 2,100,000 from the Liberal Party. And it also got 420,000 from the Greens. And quite surprising to me, 120,000 from the Communists. That is, the voters in Germany now like to change their minds depending on the circumstances, depending on the topics, or let's say even, well, I'm fine, the weather is fine, the national football team is good, and so on. Well, let's vote for the party in power. We don't want any changes. We don't want experiments. It's the slogan of the Adenauer government in the 60s. Keine Experimente, no experiments. And they always won the elections. Let's go on. The socialists lost, as I put it, 210,000 to the Merkel party and 180,000 to the new bourgeois populist movement. And they win 500,000 from liberals, 500,000 from the Greens, and almost 400,000 from the communists. Though the total score of the socialists is only 25.7, which is surprising. Okay. Yeah. And they had a win of 2.7, whilst the Merkel Party got 7.7. Well, and now to the liberals, where did the liberal voters go to? More than 2 million to the union, 500,000 to the socialists, almost 200,000 to the Green Party, and even, which is very interesting, about 100,000 voting communists.
And the liberals.
Yes, yes. Former liberal voters in 2009 now voting for the communists. Okay. Called the left, Die Linke, or the leftist. And even about 400,000 voters voted for the new party, the populist movement called Alternative for Germany. That might be interesting. And it's to say that the NPD has what we call Stammwähler, that is, people always waiting the same direction, the same party, be it the first vote and the second vote. But not enough voters who like to change, who like to change their minds. Well, because, as I put it, actually, Germany, seen from outside, is a prosperous country. It seems to have no financial problems. It seems to have. It seems to have no labor problem. It seems to have, well, it's a kind of oasis, an island in a Europe surrounded by countries with a lot of problems, be it France, be it Italy, be it Spain, be it the new ones in the East and things like that. And this mentality, transported by the mainstream media, suggested, well, we are fine, we are good, no change necessary, well, let's vote for the party in power, and our mother, Angela, will manage everything to our best. That was the feeling behind the, I would say, the decision of the voters.
Would you say for sure? Are you convinced that there are no voting machine discrepancies or problems in Germany? That everything is done honestly.
There are still no voting machines, but there are some problems with what we call letter voting. You send in your votes by a letter with the German post office to the office box of the of your hometown or even outside to the home country where you live in. And some letters disappeared. Who's responsible for it? The mail service? Those responsible to open the letters? Or those responsible to count the votes? Nobody knows.
Well, how do they know they disappeared?
Well, they sent out, let's say, if the responsible voting offices, which are town-based, Weinheim, Mannheim, Berlin, Hamburg, they sent out, let's say, 10,000 letters. We call that Briefwahl, voting by letter, which is possible. You can do it at home, put it in an envelope, shut it, and then you give it to the mail service, and it goes to the voting office. If only 9,500 appear as votes, sure, 500 are missing. But how?
Well, maybe those people decided not to vote by letter. I mean, can you tell? They went to the polls.
Yes, that is possible. A lot of possibilities, but in the end, it doesn't matter much. It can appear that in a constituency, which is, we call that umkämpft, which is on the, we call it in English, it's not clear which party will be number one.
Yeah, highly contested.
Pardon?
Highly contested.
Oh, yes, that's it.
Area.
It can be decisive if some voting letters miss, but there are two or three, I think, what do you call that in English, researches. And but if the difference between the candidates is very, very large, big, great, there won't be a second tour.
Yeah.
But for example, if the candidate elected only leads by 3, 5, 7, 10 votes, there might be a second tour, a second election. But so far, I haven't read about it. It seems that the results, as published by the office of Wiesbaden, the statistic office of Germany, will be without any problem so far. But now it's discussed, because I would say about 8 million votes are not represented in the Reichstag, because they didn't pass the 5% barrier. Mm-hmm. I know there's discussion if we should introduce a barrier of 3% or even 2% to give smaller parties a chance to send members into it. And so that the parliament reflects in a better way than now the political opinions of the Germans. But if the parties in power, those now in the Berlin Reichstags, would agree to that, it implies they will have less members, they will have less money, they will have less influence. And so it's only, I would say, a theoretical discussion which will come to an end, because they don't want to change. And if there is not a general vote, eine Volksabstimmung, a popular vote, things will be as they have been since 1949.
No, so you don't think that's going anywhere?
No, it's a theoretical. Well, some professors, write articles, write essays, discuss it at panels at TV, but as long as the union, I call it the union, CDU, CSU, and the socialists, the SPD, don't agree to change, to make a new law, voting law, there won't be a change. They are not interested in it.
But doesn't this tell the voters that the parties in power don't want to share anything, and they're not really interested in reflecting, having the reflection of the people's wishes?
Yes, I think the voters know. They know the system more or less. You must understand, there are no, as I put before, there are no problems. Hard problems for normal Germans. There are some Germans, a minority, well, everywhere, who has problems with their income, be it old age pensioners or be it low-wage workers. But they are a real minority, about, let's say, 10% of the population. And why change a law according to 10% of the population? The bourgeois, CDU, and the socialists always had a big majority.
Right. So, is everybody happy now?
As long as there's, a real crisis. And some, commentators mean, think, or even say there will be, now in the weeks to come, or the next year, the euro crisis will change a lot, but the election is gone. For 4 years, there's no change possible. But in between, next year, we've got the European elections. We've got elections on the local basis. We have got two province elections, but these are not political decisive elections. The decisions are made in Berlin and not in the province.
Right. But, you know, the European Union or European Parliament elections are more interesting, and there's more things that can happen there. But again, you know, I'm against the whole parliament that they have there. But anyway, you know, in this European Union, these members who are elected to this voting parliament, they get paid a lot of money, and they're not really required to do much at all. It's a real scam, isn't it?
Oh, well, the European Parliament doesn't exist in the minds of a normal German. That is far away, though it costs a lot of money to the Germans. Mm-hmm. And even and Germany can send, as the largest country and the country that pays most to the European Union, only 19 members. 90 members. 90.
90.
90. 90 to more than 600.
Yeah.
That is the same if you go to Southwest Africa, now Namibia, the Ovambos, with 80% of population, always have the majority. You see, even the German delegation of 90, existing of 300% nationalists as me, we can't change a thing because we're always a minority.
Uh-huh.
That's a good institution for our friends outside.
Okay.
Friends between quotation marks.
Yeah. But a lot of more alternative people from alternative type parties get elected to that parliament, don't they?
Yes, that's right. But, for example, Austria, German Austria, has got one member from the right-wing FPÖ. One member. The Italians, well, depends on Lega Nord or Alianza Nazionale or things like that, maybe about three. The Flemish have two.
Oh.
Well, the French have, I think, seven or eight. That is compared or seen to the total of the members of the European Parliament. That is nothing. That's a zero.
Yeah.
There was once a so-called European right-wing fraction of 30 members, which is towards 600, nothing. Only, well, if you are in Europe, the person who has been elected to the European Parliament, well, does well. Gets a lot of money.
Yeah.
About 10,000 euros a month, which is $13,000 a month, which is not bad.
That's too much.
Yes. Yeah. It is what I call it. This European Parliament is a puppet parliament. As is the United Nations or other institutions of the United Nations. Puppets, puppet instruments. But people who are there get a lot of money for doing nothing, but the consequences, as for the countries they come from, nothing, zero.
Okay. Well, is that it with the elections, or do you want to say
I want to put out the problems now existing. I said, seen from outside, Germany seems to be prosperous. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
New cars, fine cars, fine equipments. The Germans are what they call world champions in holiday making outside. But there are some what they call crucial points. That is, a minority of workers living under what the poverty level. Now, it's what they call the Mindestlohn, the minimum wage per hour of a German worker. It's very strange and not understandable that a rich country has people working full day and needing taxes from the state to have a normal living, because what they earn isn't enough to pay for their normal day.
Well, is the idea in Germany that everybody should have a kind of a basic middle class living? Is that what they give out money
No, it's not a middle class living. It's saying that they can pay for their lodges and they can, let's say, afford the meats and things like that.
All right.
And
minimum. Yeah.
Yeah, a minimum. Uh-huh. That they don't need tax money. Huh? For example, if you only earn in the Mannheim area where I live, you only earn, let's say, 1,000 euros. You've got a family of four. And you have 1,000 euros, the apartment you need will cost you about 700 euros. There is only 300 euros left for living. And therefore, they get what they call Wohngeld, money to pay for the apartment. And it's not normal. If their husband or if the man in this couple works full day. And it's very, very often. And therefore, in central Germany, normally working for those big trademarks, OP, Baumarkt, that is big truck stores selling material for house building, get 5 or 6 euros an hour. Mm-hmm. And now the demand, well, 8.5 at least, I think that is right in the way. But another problem coming out on is with the incoming immigrants. Mm-hmm. They are ready to work for less. Mm-hmm. Because if you come from Eastern Europe and the euro there is, well, has a lot, has very, what do you call, is a big weight compared to their home currencies. And as, let's say, American farmers in California are willing to engage Mexicans without paying the wages they pay for, let's say, white Americans, it's the same now in Germany and Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, but if these immigrants who are working for less, if they can't pay their rent and so on, then they get this rent subsidy. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it all comes out all right for them. They work for less. They get the jobs. They get in the country. And they get to stay in the country because they're working. And then they get their, you know, what they lack, they get from the German government.
That is,
would that be
that
true?
That is one of the damned consequences of what is called our basic law. The basic law was meant originally in 1949 for the German people and not for foreigners.
Yeah.
And now they stress that those fundamental articles, well, in the spirit of the human rights movement, are valid for everybody who manages, who succeeds in getting into Germany. Even gypsies and other people, doesn't matter. That's a great problem, not only for Germany. Last week, I read in the French weekly Rivarol that a foreigner aged 60 who succeeds in arriving in France is entitled to about 800 euros a month without having ever seen France or worked there. And if a couple of over 60 arrives in France,
then well, and they arrive there. Do they just arrive
yes,
there?
Yes, on yes,
their own decision because yes. because of the European
Union
laws that, you know, you can free access. Yes. So they just show up there, and once they're there, they say, here I am, and the government starts giving them this money.
Yes, for example, an Arab of the former mandatory states of North Africa, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, they've got, as the Commonwealth's passport, they've got they call Communauté, the French Community Passport. They have easy access to France. In Arab world says, well, I'm 65, let's go to France. They're entitled to the pensions I mentioned some minutes ago. It's the same in Austria. Not yet in Germany, so there was a social court in North Rhine-Westphalia 2 weeks ago ruled that, for example, members of a new European EU state who stay 1 year in Germany are entitled to the same rights, social rights, as a German-born citizen. That is crazy, but that is an attack, would I say, to the identity of the European peoples.
Well, it's purposeful. I mean, it's meant to be, and the whole goal is to destroy individual national identities and ethnic identities and so on. That's what they want to do. Yeah. And there's no question they don't want Germans to think that Germany belongs to them. It doesn't.
Yes.
This is a big, big, terrible thing to fight. I mean,
it's made possible either based on our basic law, and second, on, let's say, the laws, or I would say a kind of laws made by the European Parliament in Strasbourg or in Brussels, and is it reached by some departments of the United Nations organization, be it a refugee committee, things like that?
Well, is there any hope that with this a little bit more conservative people have been elected this last time, that they would make any changes in these laws?
As I put it, if there might come bigger financial problems for the normal German, say he can't afford anymore to take a holiday or two holidays a year, buy a new car, have a good house, go out at least two times a month with his wife or his family to a guest house to have a fine meal and things like that, I think they would start to reflect the situation. And if they ponder about some problems, they even read in the German Bild-Zeitung, which is more or less for the primitive people. Well, it's like the British Daily Mail, these popular tabloids, more or less. And they succeed in linking the problems. Less money in my pocket because more asylum seekers are here. Higher payment for the apartment because there's a problem of apartment in the big cities, Berlin, Munich, things like that. If then they start reflecting, and then, well, if we follow the slogans, the solutions offered by the national parties, things might change. But up to now, up to the present, it's only a minority confronted with problems I just tried to explain to you. The big masses, well, live, what they call it, im Überfluss, superflux, even though the English expression is, a large majority of Germans do very, very well.
Well, that is very sad, and that just goes to show that as soon as you become prosperous and successful, you're not going to give a damn about anything but that. Yeah. You're not going to do anything.
As long as you and your family, maybe, are okay, the rest doesn't matter. National dignity, let's say, true history, things like that, and even realize that they pay for others. As long as they don't realize it in their own pocket money, you see. If their money goes less, becomes less, maybe they wake up. Maybe. But I'm a bit skeptical about that.
Well, they don't. I think that the opprobrium, I can't think of a simpler word right now, that comes down on people today if they should stand up for themselves and say they don't want foreigners. And I think that fear goes to play so much, because another thing that has to happen is that you don't like seeing all these foreign people and foreign faces and everything everywhere. I mean, I think most people don't, most people don't won't say so. And, you know, and if they would, if Germany as a whole would say, we're voting for, Germany for Germans or something like that, it would be played up. Badly all around the world, everybody would hate. Let's stop buying German products, and the Germans are smart enough and have enough historical sense to know all this. They see what will happen, and then they decide it's better to have what we have today and not rock the boat here, because if we do, it's just going to work out badly for us.
Yes, it's against him as a country who has lost, I put the present perfect, because the consequences, two big wars in a short period of time, with the elimination of, let's say, the leading classes. You can't hope that they are willing to stand up against forces they think unsurmountable, unsurpassable. Yeah, right. But you are right, if the problems near the doorstep of their homes, they may change their minds. It comes now with cities which are forced to take in what they call asylum seekers, civil war, refugees, poverty, immigrants, and things like that. And there's now some stand against it. But if the polls are true, 59% of the Germans asked are willing to accept more refugees from Syria, from Iraq, from Afghanistan. But important, but only 62%, but only 38% do want them in their neighborhood. You see the difference? Human rights. Huh? But if the problem nears your daughter, comes to you, comes to your neighborhood, then you've got a fine house. Now the next house, a good neighbor, left a good neighbor, now comes a Negro family, asylum seekers. Left side, a gypsy family, only about 6 to 10 people. Well, you, I'm sure, the Germans in the middle will become racists. And will say, well, the NPD is right. Germany for the Germans. We don't need foreigners. Foreigners as guests are welcome. If sometimes the other one marries a German woman or German boy, okay. But no invasion, but no taking away our land, building mosques, building synagogues and things like that, showing, well, we have conquered a territory. I think the crisis will come when our financial problems grew more and more, and it seems that we will have more problems because Germany is feeding, I use expressing the word feeding, the rest of Europe. And if our car industry, which only our car and machine industry goes down, Germany is bankrupt.
Well, speaking of immigrants and speaking of gypsies in particular, which is such a sensitive issue, and, you know, are you familiar with this story of this little 4-year-old blonde girl? It's who was abducted by gypsies, or she's ended up in this family of gypsies with, they have like 16 children or something, this couple, and they're pretending that they're all theirs and they're getting money from different places in Greece for their children. And now it's been determined that this little girl's been taken away. They're trying to find out where she's from. She was clearly stolen, and these gypsies have all, and now they're in jail, and the woman is crying out, oh, we loved her, we took care of her, we didn't do anything wrong. Well, but they've got all these kids who don't belong to them, and so they may uncover this big child kidnapping ring, which everybody knows, and they say it's known that these things exist, and that they sell these kids into slavery and so on, and sex slavery and so on. And there are all kinds of people who have missing children, like the Maddie, what's her last name now? That British couple.
Yes, British couple, lost their child.
They're hoping maybe now she'll be found if they can break into some of these rings. Maybe she's still alive. And they, you know, but this is very interesting, and it's all about the gypsies. And here's a couple of quotes, from this story that they say, we're getting information, the police person said, from all over Europe, which shows that the problem of children going missing and falling into gypsy hands is a problem throughout the continent. Now, this can't be good for the for the image of letting gypsies come in all over Europe. And then another thing is that they claim to have three families, this couple, and they get handouts of around $6,900 a month. And, of course, the woman's been charged with illegally claiming child benefits and falsifying identity cards and birth certificates and all of this. So I'm just saying that this is good news unless the media just crushes it. So far hasn't been able to, you know, but it's new.
I think the gypsy problem is to some extent a special one. As far as Germany is concerned, because of the gypsy policy of the Third Reich. That is why they easily get what they want in Germany. In France, for example, they can act in a different way. The now Minister of the Interior, a certain Monsieur Valls, V-A-L-L-S, now is attacking the gypsies. He can do that. Primo, a socialist, second, French, and France, apart from the government of Vichy, had no national socialist government acting overtly against the gypsies. And this is what they call a kind of a gate into the German social system. Normal people are against, but on a higher level, very, very few politicians have the guts to speak out, to try to explain the problem, stating, for example, that history cannot explain everything. The history of today, of the former times, let's say 60 years, 70 years ago, cannot explain the poverty and the social problems of the gypsies in some states of Europe, Bulgaria, Romania, Serbia, Montenegro, etc. But I say, as long as the normal German is not confronted personally with such problems, he won't react politically in the way I'm hoping for.
Yes, but here I'm just saying that this instance, if you know, if it can be shown, if there's can be shown in a larger way, which I hope it will, but that gypsies engage, they're so dishonest, they're so outside of the social, you know, system, and if they're engaging in stealing people's children and that they never see again, and so on, then that pretty much shows that the Third Reich
is only
cannot want gypsies.
One way of income. They've got different ways of income. They even, let's say, educate young people or the kids in stealing.
Yes.
They are groups of stealing, of young gypsy stealing everywhere in Europe. They know under 14 they can't be judged and things like that. They even gypsies have intelligent leaders who very well know, let's say, the social and judicial system of the countries, I put the word expressively, they invade, be it Switzerland, be it Austria, it doesn't matter what, be it France, be it Great Britain, for example. And is it even possible, based on the human rights movement, based on the so-called constitution of the different European states, and based on EU, let's say, laws inviting those people. And apart from the fact that France and above all Germany produce, I use that word expressively, less children. We in some years are in lack of, let's say, good craftsmen. And now they invite young Spaniards, Nye Creek, now tell them to come to Germany, to be a carpenter, to be, let's sing like that. Mm-hmm. It's a shame that we had enough Germans when Germany was not as prosperous as it was nowadays. And this prosperity that people do to become egotists. Mm-hmm. They only think for themselves. They don't think for their, let's say, the family, the clan, the community, the people they come from. They are an offspring of. That is even a state of mind which must be fought. And it must be changed. And I think, it's my hope, that with the prosperity going down, people realize the real values, what the family life is, realize what a country, what the people is, and they come back to the sources, back to the roots.
Yeah, but what do you do about all these foreigners in your countries that are going to be more and more of them are going to be there?
Yes.
And I think this the point should be made that that we know that gypsies were not murdered in Hitler's National Socialist Third Reich, and the fact that they didn't want gypsies in society, that they put them into camps and so on to get them out of society, was well-founded and was intelligent. It wasn't, you know, evil or cruel, considering what gypsies do.
Yes, not only gypsies, but nowadays with this EU or the EU, European Union, has got I don't know if your listeners know about the Treaty of Rome, now some 70 years old. This treaty has got four holy cows. Holy cows. That is free moving of all the citizens inside the European Union. Let's say every Bulgarian, every South Italian can go inside the Union where he wants to. Second, free move of the capital of money. Free settlement, or free settlement to create a business of your own inside any country of the Union. And though, as long as now the gypsies, or doesn't matter only the gypsies, have a passport of a state, being a member of the Union, they can go where they want to. Therefore, I said 10 years ago, we must leave the European Union, we must get back our sovereignty, and we must decide which kind of people we invite to come in and which kind of people we let in for a longer time or for a short time. That is a political question, I think, with that topic. Next year's elections, national parties might get more votes.
Well, I was somewhat disappointed that that alternative for whatever it was, alternative for Germany party did so poorly. They are the anti-EU party. Otherwise, they're pretty liberal, though, but at least they were for getting out of the EU.
Folks, even a slogan, I first say in German, maybe some of your listeners understand German. Mehr Geld für Opa und Oma statt für Sinti und Roma. More money for granny and grandpa and grandma than for Sinti and Roma, who are gypsies. And, yes.
Yeah. I think the NPD used that for a motto.
Yes, that's it.
And they tried to
forbade it, but it was not possible. It's a loud political slogan. I think more slogan of that kind with the immigration of now southeastern foreigners or otherwise, Arabs from Syria, from Iraq, and now our Afghanistan problem. Huh? All those Afghans having worked for the German soldiers over there want to come to Germany, and it will be made possible.
What happens when you get involved all around the world. That's the purpose of it, too.
It's a crazy situation, but the main problem is if the normal German changed his mind or realized the situation he is in, maybe his next vote will be a very, very different one. That's my own hope.
Here's an idea, Gunter, because I think that the way things are organized today, if the German people decided that they wanted to become much more, or you might say reactionary or something, The world would not allow them to do it. They wouldn't be allowed to do it. And even the Federal Republic, the people who are leaders in the Federal Republic, like Merkel, would not allow it to happen. They would intervene legally in one way or another. So if the German people expressed that in their vote, it wouldn't be allowed.
Only instead of voting 40% for the Union, for CDU and CSU, only voting 40% for the Nationalists, or even, let's say, a small 51% would be enough for me to change everything I said before. It's up to the people to change their minds and to elect other members into the parliament.
Yeah, but look at Greece. Look here with the Golden Dawn. The Golden Dawn was getting a larger percentage of the popular population. They were concerned about what the vote, upcoming elections, what the vote would be. So they found ways to call it a criminal organization. And that's exactly what this NSU, this National Socialist Underground business is about, and this big trial that's been going on for about a year already and still got a long way to go, where they're just trying to indoctrinate everybody that you can't allow these things. They're trying to connect, aren't they, the NPD with criminality, because with this these people in this so-called underground, that's what they do.
Yes, maybe, but let's say on a normal election, if let's say how would I put a good expression in English. If, let's say, at a certain date, election date, and having thought about it long before, confronted with the problems I mentioned before, the Germans would vote, let's say, a nationalist party with over 30%, it would not be possible in a short period of time to ban it. They can ban small parties, or as in Greece, they can arrest and inter and put in prison some party leaders, but not the movement. And if the movement is in the mind, not in the structure, well, at last the mind will overcome the structures. And if you've got a movement with 30%, we'll have judges, policemen, we have businessmen, merchants who are in your boat. And you see, well, we must change the direction of the flagship of our nation. And now the Russians are gone, the Americans still present. About 30 years ago, they, well, if you vote right-wing, the Russians will invade. That was enough. The Russians are gone. Mm-hmm. And now the Americans, well, have seen some barracks in the western part of Germany. But I don't think that if a right-wing government is at stake, that the Americans would officially invade or declare war to Germany. Maybe they would try to eliminate the protagonist, the main important person of the party. But that's not the question.
If I have to interrupt, Gunter. We're going to a break. We'll be back in 5 minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
Nur eine einzige Zahl erinnert an deine Qual. Keiner kommt mehr hierher, niemand vermisst dich mehr. Oh, es tut weh, wenn ich deinen Stein so sehe. Treuer Soldat, mehr als ein namenloses Grab. Ich höre Stimmen, ich höre Gespräche. Kamera, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimm im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich schwöre dir, so wahr ich hier stehe, ich trage die Fahne, wohin ich auch gehe. Nie werde ich euch verraten, für kein Geld der Welt. Ich kämpfe für dich, ungebrochener Held. Ich kämpfe für dich, unbekannter Held. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich gedanke zu mir sprich. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nehmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht,
egal was geschieht,
wir werden bei euch sein. Und wer dann auch lügt, euer Namen benutzt, eure Heldentaten durch Geld hier beschmutzt, den trifft das Schwert von unsichtbarer Hand. Ein Totenwächter von Wotan gesandt. Ein Totenwächter im schwarzen Gewand. Doch ich höre eine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Zeit, übernimmt unseren Eid, nimm im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen, ihr habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Kamerad, du siehst, wir stehen für euch ein, die Kraft, die wir brauchen, wird uns Wotan verleihen, ihr gabt so viel, für dieses Land, es war der Glaube, der euch verband. Es war der Glaube, der euch verband. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich sag zu mir sprich. Du Kamerad. verrat, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Und kehre ich einst an deinen Stein zurück, berichte ich dir von unserem Glück. Dann ist es geschafft und wir sind wieder frei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, darum ging's mir dabei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, denn jetzt sind wir frei. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimm dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich höre eine Stimme, zu mir spricht, du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Und bis an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Halt. Wir sind Geiste, die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. That fine was, music.
Yes, I was going to ask you how you like that, Victor. Yeah, that is Soldat. No, wait a minute. Let me get it right here. Unbekannter Soldat. How do you pronounce that?
Der unbekannte Soldat. Der unbekannte, the unknown soldier.
Yeah, unbekannter.
Der
unbekannter Soldat. Unknown Soldier by Annette Mueller.
Stress on the first syllable. Der Unbekannte.
Yes, okay. All right.
Unknown, the unknown soldier.
Yes, that's it. And so this is Saturday afternoon with Carolyn, and it is October 19th, and you're listening to Gunter Deckert right then from Germany, who is our guest on the program today. And we've had a good first half, and should we move on? Should you move on to energy supplies or, you know, the rising cost of energy?
I first wanted to add some points I forgot in our first
half.
All
right. Very good.
We have now 35 members of parliament who are not German-born. Among them, one Negro and a lot of them Turks. That's important to know. And most of those called migrant Germans are members of the SPD fraction. And the union...
What percentage of that did you say? 30%? Did you say 30% are not German?
35 members. Of the new parliament. And 12 are members of the SPD, 9 of the union, 7 of the Greens, and 7 of the communists. And most of them are Turks. And another important point, a friend of mine sent me the Jüdische Allgemeine, that is the Jewish chronic, you can say, weekly, now subsidized by the state. And
oh, no!
Yes, sure,
that's
sure,
a totally
sure.
Jewish newspaper.
Yes, yes, and so is the Aufbau of New York is subsidized by the German government.
Is that just something they do for Jews?
Pardon?
Is that just something they do for Jews? They don't do it for anybody else? Anybody else's papers?
That's it. That's our history. We pay. Well, and in September, 25th of September, the Zentralrat, the leading body of the Jews in Germany, said, we want more social security for Jewish migrants into Germany. And one problem is, most of the Jews came in the late 20 years and now in their old age. And if they have not worked in Germany, there's a lack of money. And they want money, more money from the German state. And I am sure they will get it because, you know, our policy some decades ago. They demand, and the German government will fulfill their wishes and are quite open to what they want from the government. And very, very important or for you is I found, or I was sent, I don't remember anymore, a copy of the Time issue, a copy of August the 12th with the title, Why Germany Must Save the Euro to Save Itself.
Time magazine, and, you mean?
Yes, it's of August the 12th and written by, the text is written by Rana, R-A-N-A, Forahar. It's not a typical English-American name, but it's the old, let's say, tale stating that we became only prosperous with the help of Europe, which is wrong. Switzerland, which is not part of the European Union, I hope your listeners know, is much better off than we Germans are because they have not to pay for the bankrupt states, which is even now nearing France. I will give you some details as to, let's say, the money Germany is, well, bound to pay the day it needs. We pay, of all the UE debts, about 28%, the biggest payer. We are what you call the paymaster of the European Union. Whilst, for example, Malta, the island of Malta, only pays about 3%. And in the council, Malta has the same vote as Germany has. Quite crazy. And if, for example, one of the poorer states is not able to pay the money demanded by the European Congress, let's say Luxembourg, Iceland, Slovenia, Slovakia, Ireland, then Germany pays 28% of the percentage of the country that is not able to pay. For example, if Spain, which has to contribute 12% of the income of the European Union, or what they call the solidarity pot, they call it solidarity pot. If Spain cannot pay its 12%, Germany has to pay 28% of the Spanish departure percentage. Oh. Yes, that's crazy. And it's
And you know, just speaking of Malta, there's some people from Malta or who connect themselves with this movement in Malta of a pan-Europeanism, you know, white pan, you know, all white, you know, getting the foreigners out of Europe. But the Maltese, well, they want to be the leaders of it. And of course, naturally, who's going to pay and who's going to do everything? Germans, but the Germans are not going to be able to lead it because it's going to be, you know, everybody's equal. All European nations are equal. It's always these little tiny countries who want to do this and want to make everything in, you know, Europe, everybody equal. But where's all the brains and where's all the money, especially, going to come from? Well, we know where. So, you know, it just irritates me, these people. That's why, go ahead. Sorry. I can rant about this.
The German amount up to the present is now of 211 billion euros. If those countries I mentioned is the smaller ones, what it's Slovenia, Slovakia, Ireland, Finland, Portugal, will get into financial problems. What the German government for the German people has guaranteed is now 211 billion euros.
Guaranteed by the Germans.
Yeah. Guaranteed by the German government, not the German people. It's quite different.
Right.
Because they don't want to have what you call a popular vote, Volksabstimmung. If there is a popular vote, such a policy won't get through. They know that, and therefore they are against popular votes. But it's up to the German people to change that. Huh? And as they call it, Germany is the paymaster, is a good German word, D die Milchkuh. Germany is the cow for the other European countries.
Milk cow, yeah.
Yeah. I want to change it. And there are some important economists or bankers who now change their minds, having realized the problems behind this euro currency, but they are not heard. Ah. Even those who were in favor before, important people in the banking system or being professors, no, they're not heard anymore. They don't get invited anymore to what they call the panel, the talk masters. It's, well, it's always a political problem, and it means power, power, power. If you ain't got power in democracy, you are not heard. Power means money, members of parliament, and people acting for you, activists.
Mm-hmm. Well, so continue.
Yes, and another act, I want to explain to your listeners the problem of asylum seeker, civil war refugee, and poverty migrant. Well, as I told already, each citizen of a member state of the European Union has the right to move, to go where he likes to.
Mm-hmm.
One moment again. Have kind of Zeit. This is for what they call the poverty migrants, the gypsies from Southern Europe, Bulgaria, Romania. They can enter the European countries. Second are what they call the civil war refugees, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria. They've got special, it's a special handling. And last but not least are what they call the normal asylum seekers from Africa, which are two poverty migrants. And you think where they come from. There are six routes how they try to get into the paradise they regard, the European Union is regarded by them. One is via Senegal and the Canary Islands with fisher boats. The other one is from Morocco, what they call the Maghreb states, to Spain via the Strait of Gibraltar. The third is known to you as well, the island of Lampedusa, south of Sicily, that is from Tunisian airports and Libyan airports. As long as there were strong governments, dictatorships in Ben Ali in Tunisia, Gaddafi, there were no asylum seekers from this part because they closed the ports to Negroes. Another one is from Iraq and Turkey via the Turkish-Greek frontier in Thracia. Another one is via Slovakia, all those coming from the Chechens, from the Caucasus people, officially Russians, but they aren't Russian, they are Muslim, they are Turk people. And all those try to get into Europe, and there's a system. If an asylum seeker, a normal one, arrives in Italy, he has to stay in Italy. But what did the Italian government do? They gave temporary passports and some money,
and
people came to Hamburg.
And so much for all these European peoples working together and having a common cause. They don't. They'll always look after, each one will look after their own interests.
Very, very tricky. And in Hamburg, a Protestant community allowed them to camp in their church. So that is illegal. That's a crazy systems everywhere. Be it in Austria, it's the only state more or less being quite, I would say, correct or upright is Switzerland, which is not part of the European Union.
And not Austria.
They are not dependent. They don't depend on what the European community demands of their member states. If, for example, at Lampedusa or Malta arrive, let's say, 10,000 people, they say, well, see in the European countries, 1,000 to Spain, 1,000 to France, 3,000 to Germany, to Sweden, things like that. And the national governments can't do anything against it because they're not sovereign anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's nothing worse than allowing large numbers of these Africans to come up into Europe and you can't get them out. I mean, and this is just, has to be seen as as this is a plan. This has been the plan. It's not accidental that they're destroying the strong governments of all these countries of these questionable people and these African, North African people, and then turning them into refugees and the Arab people too, turning them into refugees.
And even most people don't know is the fact that a lot of those asylum seekers or refugees pay some $1,000 to get there, even more than 10.
Yeah, where do they get that money?
Oh, a poor Somalia, a poor, let's say, Pakistani or Afghani can pay $10,000 to those people who get to who try to get them into the European Union. That is, well, what we call organized criminality, international gangs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's all organized, and that these people are still, you know, are able, these organizations like the EU, like the UN and so on, are able to just have people see them as respectable and as working for world peace and, you know, working for the good of all and so on. It's just such a crock. People really need to have all this cobwebs wiped away.
For example, you know the problem of the American border towards Mexico, I think your listeners know.
Yeah.
Yes, the problems. Well, if, for example, a European a border state, let's say, like Poland or Slovakia, would construct something like I've got in Arizona, there would be a public outcry. Impossible. Impossible. And what we have here is what they call a green frontier, an open frontier. It's easy for people who know the area to get foreigners in. And once they are in, they had to be taken care of. And as they know now that France, Germany, Austria have got a better social system than Spain and Italy, sure, they prefer to go to France, Austria, and Italy. And if they succeed, even into Switzerland. But then they are very, very quickly fired out, as a rule, not always. And that's a big problem, because the national governments are not suffering anymore, as I put it several times before.
Yeah, well, they foolishly gave up their sovereignty,
Germany,
and very few of them actually voted to. Well,
Germany,
I'm sorry, say that again.
The European Union.
Germany what?
Must get out of the European Union. And then we are suffering again, and we can say, well, here's the German border. You are not allowed to enter Germany. Go home.
Yeah, and of course, if you were to get out of the, if Germany were to vote to get out of the European Union, well, everybody knows that would destroy the European Union. But at the same time, whatever was left there, they would react against Germany. That's what I think. The people are afraid of. I said
they like to say,
before.
If we try to leave, there would be another war. That is crazy. There would be a European war, because which is quite well. Good news that the populist movements in the surrounding countries go stronger and stronger, because they're confronted with the same immigration problem: be it gypsies, asylum seekers, civil war refugees, and things like that. Everywhere is the same problem. As long as you got enough money, you can say, well, I'm not against foreigners, doesn't matter what, black, green, red, and so on. But if they come near to your home, to your apartment, to, let's say, your community circle, people don't want that. Because these people are strangers in the very strict sense of the word. They don't belong to the community entity they want to enter, they want to invade.
Right. What about that big action that the NPD was supporting in north of Berlin, in that that building that was turned into a refugee center, and they had a lot of people joining into it. How successful do you think that was?
The official reaction is in the media is a bad one. Well, the racists, the Nazis.
Yeah, right.
But normal people say that is okay. At least somebody who stands up and who speaks out. But when it goes to elections, this public feeling this public state of mind doesn't become a vote. It's a difference between yes, they are okay, and yes, we vote. That's a big problem. I don't know how to solve that. It's a psychological problem. If you had a popular vote saying refugees in Germany, out Germany, one problem, one vote, a decision, I'm sure the majority would say we don't want anymore. We don't want immigrants anymore, or the only rare exceptions if they're really politically suppressed and persecuted. But it's
and when there's all these people who have lots of children, it actually works psychologically on white people to say, well, I don't need to have children. You know, I can just, you know, enjoy myself. There's too many children all over. There's too many people. There's plenty of other people's children, or other people want to have children. They're not going to stop, so let them have the children. They don't seem to, because they're afraid to have the racial idea. They're not distinguishing between the race of these children and what, you know, how valuable these children are, what the meaning of them is.
Yes, you are right.
I don't think it's just money, only money that people don't have children.
You can't utter such ideas in public. Because at once you are criticized, at once you are insulted, at once you are labeled a Nazi or a fascist and things like that. And if some position, a teacher or a doctor, that would be your death punishment. So, but it's the feelings inside, it's underlying, I would say, in German, das Innewohnende, the feeling inside, what your thoughts, your mind, and you can express that at elections and on an election day, because in the cabin, or even if you fill that out the paper at home, you are not watched well. Big Brother is not there. You are alone. You can put your cross, you can vote the candidate who is standing for German sovereignty, who is standing for non-immigration policy. We're standing for a policy of leaving the European Union because we pay, because we got more and more problems. We don't profit of it.
Don't you think, though, that most Germans are convinced that that it's safer and better to be a European and to go along with Europe than it is for Germany to say, well, we're going to stand as Germany?
Actually, it's half-half.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are against have voted for the parties who are for. That is strange. That is German, I would say.
Well, why didn't that anti-EU party do better? I'm surprised at that. Why didn't Germans vote for that party?
The main topic was another euro. And it's right that there's... would say inside the established parties, there were some anti-euro members of parliament. And I'm not quite sure if this new populist movement that doesn't want to be labeled as right-wing or conservative or populist has only been raised by former CDU members to help Angela Merkel to stay in power. For example, it was, yes, possible, or it seemed that the liberals didn't make it anymore. And with this new populist or the bourgeois group, the founder was a long time CDU member in the city of Hamburg, well, had climbed over the 5% barrier, Merkel would have been tolerated by this group with what they call a minority government.
Mm-hmm.
And the Merkel and her party couldn't have realized their proper aims, but no being forced as now to work out a compromise with the socialists. It's a mixture now. It's not the program, the election program Merkel proposed to her voters. For example, no higher taxes The socialists want higher taxes to pay for the new people, the gypsies, the asylum seekers, the Iraqis, the Afghanis, things like that. The UN said no higher taxes. But now this party didn't make the 5%, and the Merkel party is forced, well, to work out a compromise, which seems to be accepted by a majority of about 60% of the German voters, as a late poll of last week showed.
Well, what here's the big question. Now that Merkel has been elected and she's had this big, you know, not a majority, but close to it, she is way ahead of everybody else. Is she going to now cave in more to the European Union on these Eurozone or to the Eurozone ideas about, all countries, banks supporting whatever needs to be done, and that would be most of it would come from Germany. And she's been holding the line against that final last, talk about giving up sovereignty, that final last step of giving up financial sovereignty. Will she do that now?
I don't know. In the last months, sure, before the election day, she was, well, surprisingly silent as to that question. Mm-hmm. But her Ministry of Finance, Herr Schäuble, only said we must do more for the euro. And as on the last, let's say, 6 to 8 months, the socialists, the SPD, was the pro-European party, I sure think that the socialists will, the Merkel party, force to change their mind. That means, as you call it, giving up their financial sovereignty, paying more, even to a kind a fund of European of unemployed Europeans. For example, in Spain, about 25% of the people under 30 are unemployed. That means, apart from feeding our unemployed, German-born and not German-born, about 5 to 6 million, having no work, having no job, that German money would go to France, to Spain, to Italy, to feed those unemployed youngsters and things like that.
Right.
It's possible that there would a compromise, that even a compromise on that topic, but if that becomes known, it might cause some trouble. It might cause some uproar. But I don't know if that uproar will last up to the next elections. The Germans are easy to forget problems as long as they're not confronted themselves with the problem, as I put it. As long as the husband or the man or the woman who makes the family live, or the couple live, or the group live, different, put in our way, patchwork family live, well, has no problem, he sees no problem. If their income gets less, they will wake up, I hope. They will ask questions. They will ask difficult questions, uneasy questions to the politicians. And they even get demonstrations organized by the trade unions or by normal groups, a lot of if possible.
But I don't think the Germans will be the German people will be a strong force unless they have a strong leader like Adolf Hitler. And there's if strong leader shows up, you know, they will not the German people, but, you know, outsiders will make sure that something he doesn't get anywhere. You know,
you don't need your problem is you don't need a strong leader. I think the Weimar times are different from the times now. It's enough if, well, it's a local problem, there is a leader. If it's a province problem, there are leaders. And on the national level, there are different grassroots movements who have leaders, not nationwide. Because if you organize a party, you have got other problems. It's not the time to discuss the problems of a new party, with structure, with the law, with the police and the financing, like that. If the crisis is there, I think there will be leaders, local ones, provincial ones, and national ones, to lead a movement it well, against the system, as I called it, against the system, which is, in my mind, anti-German.
Yeah. Okay. So what you want? What more do you want to say about that? And is there something else you wanted to go into? We've got, we're at the half hour. We're got a half hour left.
Please. Yes.
Oh, and let me tell people, let me invite people to call if they have, you know, a clear-cut question of Gunter.
To attract your attention to two facts, which may be known to German-born Americans or Americans having German ancestry. It is the Völkerschlacht von Leipzig, the People's Battle of Leipzig, 200 years ago, when the Germans united with the Russians and Austrians defeated Napoleon. There are now celebrities, and in almost in most of the media, Leipzig and this battle and the birth of the German nation are celebrated. I don't know if German magazines or TV emissions give that, but it seems that, as I put it, in some aspects, even mainstream media can't avoid speaking about this Völkerschlacht of Leipzig, this People's Battle of Leipzig, which was more or less the end of the Napoleon domination of Europe. And you've got Die Befreiungshalle in Kelheim. Interesting, that is the Hall of Liberty at Kelheim, which is near Regensburg, north of Munich, now erected 150 years ago, or the Monument of Leipzig, erected 100 years ago, and even now celebrated on its German stamp of 0.45 euros. And it goes with that, the personalities of Jan, maybe, Turnvater Jan, Jan, who served 6 years in prison because he was a patriot, and he was a founder of the German gymnastic movement, Deutscher Turnerbund. It was Jan. For example, the volunteer troops of Lützow, Lützow's Jäger. It's that time of Theodor Körner. All those German minds, poets, politicians, administrators, who realized the awakeness of the Germans as a people and nation in their fight against the domination of Europe by Napoleon. Maybe in some American papers, if not those, if there are German-American papers or papers with some text in German, they should commemorate the Völkerschlacht of Leipzig and go into details that might be quite interesting even for English-born Americans.
Okay.
And as to the NSU, as you put it, Caroline, well, one number interesting, the cost so far will be by about 20 million euros. You understood?
The NSU, the cost, oh, the cost of this trial and this investigation?
Million euros.
Okay.
And the latest news about that is that they try to find out how the murder weapon, a Czech Cheska, mm-hmm. came into the hands of Mundlos and Mundhaupt. It's not quite clear. There are different, witnesses.
Right.
And witness was wrong. A woman pretending she had seen Beate Zschäpe in the Dortmund area. She was mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a strange story is that the policewoman killed at Heilbronn should have been killed by right-wingers near to the NPD.
She was killed. What do you mean near the NPD?
By right-wingers that are near to the NPD, although more or less people who are in favor of the NPD. But it's a story so far, not yet proof, but in the media, Bild-Zeitung, for example, and other left-wing media, it's presented as a kind of fact.
Yes, that's what they do.
Yes, to many with the media. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And before it was said that the policewoman was killed by a Turk working for the FBI. A lot of strange stories about that.
Right. Right. But then they decided to make all these killings be by these two guys. I mean, they were not, they're not all, now, do they, when they say that they're all killed with the same Seska pistol, does that mean the same brand with the same kind of bullets, or does that mean the very same gun?
Well, the whole trial is a very queer, a very strange one. We'll see the outcome, I think. But as the press pushes, they're only speaking of the trio that they are murderers, that they are killers, though there's not been a judgment. The court is in big difficulties, in big trouble. It's quite,
I think so. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's a pressure on the judges, and I would say they will. Yeah, Beate Chebe has got no chance in this political system. She must be a helper of the killing duo. No?
Well, but they, you know, the trial so far looks very, you know, laughable. I think. I mean, they're not. They're acting very serious and everything, but they're not coming up with anything that ties together.
No, it takes time. It takes time, and they are different. I think the sessions are 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah, because, but you know, all right, but here, but so far, every time they've talked about one particular murder, and they bring forth the witnesses they have, they're not very good.
Yes,
they're not really.
A lot of witnesses, they must be heard. They encounter, what do you call it, the American system, the lawyers of Beate Chebe and the others accused can ask questions as well. It takes time. It takes time.
I've never read a single cross-examination or question from the defense attorneys. Are they waiting until later to do their cross-examination?
Yeah. And what is not reported in the mainstream media is another trial in Koblenz, which where the Moselle goes into the Rhine, Koblenz, 26 young people, half of them members of the NPD or the Young Nationalists, and half of them what they call Free Nationalists, are accused of what now, as you put it with a Greek right-wing leader, a criminal organization. But only it deals with the problems of fights between right-wingers and left-wingers, based on the yearly commemoration parades of the Rheinwiesenlager, the Rheinwiesen camps, where a lot of German soldiers under the observation of the Eisenhower troops died in miserable circumstances. And that is a process going on for over a year. And it, in the press, it's nothing, because there are no foreigners involved. There are no Jews involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when these... when these right-wingers or the nationalists or whatever use have to fight off these vicious anti-fascists and anti-racists, they call themselves, you know, then you have these big fights, and they always make it out like it's the fault of the nationalists, which it isn't.
I didn't understand your question. Please, again.
Well, when they have these, fights with between these youths, they're always, it seems to me, they're caused by the overwhelming numbers of those who call themselves anti-fascist and anti-racist. They're actually the communists and so on, and the left-wing youth, and they attack the right-wing youth who are trying to say have a demonstration or do something, and then they, if they defend themselves, then they arrest people and they blame it on the nationalist youth.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's right. That's right. Unfortunately, there was a case not far from where I live during this national election on September the 22nd, about 50 kilometers southeast from here. It's a town of about 40,000 inhabitants. There was what they call an information action, and they had been attacked by about a dozen left-wingers with caps, and we call it vermummt. They were beaten the table was thrown away, but this time, quite extraordinary, the police investigated. And they have meanwhile arrested three people because one of them had been recognized by one standing by. But that is the exception. Another yeah. problem I know, a situation is east of Berlin, NPD meeting had been attacked, and a young comrade who helped to push them back is now accused of having beaten an attacker. Quite strange. He has only defended himself and helped other comrades to push the attackers back. But normally you have got what we call bad cards in this game.
Yeah.
As a right winger, you're always the wrongdoer, and the left winger is always the poor victim.
Well, that is right. That is right. Unfortunately, we've got all this we have to overcome. Did you want to? I like this topic we're on right now, but did you want to say something about energy?
Yes.
Or not?
Well, it is linked to the problem of prosperity. With the yes of the Merkel government to have the atomic energy plants, let's say, killed in about 10 years' time, and with a new law in favor of they call erneuerbare Energien, renewable energy, wind and sun, which cost billions of euros,
yeah.
the price of normal energy for the households is going up. 10 days ago, it increases now of about 7 euro cent per kilowatt. That means, let's say, up to 200 euros more for a normal household.
A year.
Yes, yes, yes. It doesn't seem much, but it is much.
Well, yeah.
There are a lot of people now who can't pay their electricity bill anymore, and they get switched off.
Mm.
That is what they call this minority not earning the minimum wage of 8.50.
Mm-hmm.
If they have to pay, let's say, 20 euros or 30 euros a month more for energy, that is much for them. And at the same time, they can appeal to the local government, the local authorities, to get that more energy payment refunded, but which is paid out of taxpayers' money. It's crazy.
Well, did you think it was a good idea for them to make that decision, no more atomic energy?
No, it wasn't good.
I don't think it is either.
Sure, as a country that depends on industry, needing a lot of energy, you should use any energy possible, and above all, energy you can control by yourself. That is, not to be dependent on foreign
That's
states,
right.
or foreign countries. For example, get our gas, natural gas, from Russia, and some from Norway. We get our petrol, from Saudi Arabia. And as long as we need a lot of natural gas and oil as imports, and we don't control or have a say concerning the prices, if this price gets up, our products we export get more expensive. You see the link.
Was it the leftists who wanted this? Was it the people on the left mostly who wanted to get rid of atomic energy?
Yeah, the Greens, I don't know, they are, it's a kind of fantasy, a crazy idea. You see, the Fukushima effect gone,
yeah.
and the sweat in Baden-Württemberg, more than 20%, now have gone to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
People realize the fantasies of those people. But a country, depending on energy, we have only got some coal, not enough. You call it brown coal, not enough. We need energy from outside. It's impossible to have as many purveyors as possible in order not to be dependent on one only. For example, natural gas only Russia. Russia can dictate the price, can dictate the amount and things like that, can even, well, dictate a kind of policy in Germany. Mm-hmm. And that's the energy.
And Germany does not, doesn't have, you know, is not on the coastline. It doesn't have a lot of things that could happen. What were they considering? Terrorism or something? That some terrorists?
The North coastline, we have got some oil, but that is... Yeah. That is, what do you call it? It's peanuts. It's peanuts for the energy demand we have. With our industry demanding such a lot of energy, well, that's peanuts. We depend on others. But the dependence should be not too large. Let's say if we only import 40% would be okay. 60% of our own. And our nuclear plants were much better than those in France. And France will build new ones. So will Great Britain, so will Sweden, so will Poland, so will Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, so then you'll be affected by those.
Yes, we buy energy from France, from Slovakia, from Czechia. Energy produced in nuclear plants. Crazy system of policy.
Well, that policy ought to be reversed. Whatever got into Merkel that she... went along with that. I don't know. So lots of money now in sun and wind energy.
Yes. For example, I'm not against these new energies, but it's not the solution of our energy problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's, as we use water power, why not use wind power? Why not use sun power? But it's not a solution. It's only... something that may help in a crucial situation.
Mm-hmm.
But our aluminium industry needs very, very, very much energy that can't be solved by wind power, water power, or by sun power.
Huh? Well, I just found out from someone today that go ahead, finish what you're going to say.
The industry, well, is so, they are strong circles inside the German industry who want to prolong the production of atomic energy. The end is, I think, is 2021-24, a long time to go. And we have got very, very productive and new nuclear plants. And I think when in 2017, 4 years' time, we will have... Right, normally a new bourgeois government, they can say, well, 2024 is too short, we need more time, you see. They play. But now with saying no more nuclear plants, they realize, they succeeded in making the influence of the Green Party less. 20%, 10%. And yeah. The Green with the Communists would have been influenced in a very, very high scale, the German industrial production. And we depend on export. That is, we are not, yeah. Let's say, the soil and as has for France or the United States or Australia or South Africa. We are very densely populated and we can't live on our agriculture anymore. Not? We need imports of food of, let's say, plants, fruits, anything like that. And we can only pay that with our exports industry, car industry, machine industry, still the big sales of Germany, German products. So, in the last 10 years, I read it in the Handelsblatt, which is a commercial weekly in Germany, Düsseldorf, based in the Rhineland, a typical Rhineland, that Chinese enterprises, businesses, have bought what I would call key industries, machine factory industry, small ones, but very effective ones, family-run ones, but with a younger generation, not willing to work hard, not having an 8-hour day, but let's say a 10-hour week, 10-hour day, a whole week, sold their family business to Chinese enterprises. The Chinese are on a big, what they call, buy tour in Europe, not only in Germany, in France as well. They buy everything they can get. It's the same with the Arabs. Arabs invest a lot of money in German industries. Well, knowing that the Germans are hardworking and they get the money out. Most of the German DAX companies, the DAX is the, what is in New York, the Wall Street index, are owned by foreigners. Most shares of the German enterprises being part of the DAX, the German Wall Street index, are owned by foreigners. Did you know that?
Okay. Well, no, but I don't know. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Some of them hedge funds made in the USA and run by people who prefer to go to a synagogue instead of a normal church.
Well, what do Germans do with their money?
The normal Germans.
Yeah.
Spending it.
Oh, they're spending it. They are, huh? They've become spendthrifts. What happened to the old idea that all Germans wanted to do was save their money?
The generation of their grandfathers and grandmothers, well, was a different one from today. They had late money back. They didn't buy a car with nothing in their money box. You can now buy a car with and paying, let's say, 100 euros a month, a new car with no capital at all. And the generation of the parents, well, added one-third was their own capital, two-thirds by the bank, if they had a good job. And now it's totally bank-financed.
Mm-hmm.
And with a policy that gives no rent on your savings, zero policy, well, with the inflation going on, why should you hold your money back? It loses in worth.
I know. I can't reconcile myself to this way of thinking.
The only thing is to invest in ground, in soil, in buildings, I mean in gold and silver, and in some enterprises as Mercedes-Benz, BASF, or Hoechst, well, the most important German enterprises having a worth in its own, that is possible, but the tendency is not to save a lot for your older days. It's spending it, and that is even wished by the government. To spend means consummation. That means money, the more value tax income. That's the same, 20%. You pay something, 20% goes to the state. And it's necessary, in my mind, to make the industry work. Even though, let's say, a fridge, former times, a 20-year one. Now, after 5 years, you must have a new because he's burned out. It doesn't work anymore. We call that produziert auf Verschleiß. I don't know the English word. It's produced, I would say, not to last long.
We used to call that planned obsolescence.
Yes, that's
it. A long time. That goes way back.
Yeah. For example, my wife now drives an old Volkswagen produced in 1964.
Wow.
It's a gift of her aunt who died 2 years ago. Well, the motor, it's still the same. And it goes. Well, and everything is well done, but that is not meant or wanted nowadays. You should buy a new car at least every fifth, sixth, or even 10 years. Mm-hmm. You say, produziert auf Verschleiß, well, produced not to last long.
Right.
And so you're not at time or have not the money to save if you must steadily invest. In your home, in your apartment, I think, or in your car. If you work, for example, at a town 30 miles away from your hometown, you need a car. Apart from Berlin, we have a good what do you call it, railway system, underground system. But if you live in the country and have to go to work to Mannheim, you have to travel 30 kilometers. If you know, if you use the train, that means up to 3 or 4 hours a day on the train. With a car, it means only 1 hour. And therefore, you need a car. And if you are forced to buy a new car every 6 or 7 years, well, it's more important than only a car. A car lasts 20 years or 30 years, which is possible, technically.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. We've got about 3.5 minutes left, Gunter. Is there something you'd like to fit in here before we close?
Yes, I hope you are not unwilling or uneasy. I would say that your idea of a Rivers conference next January is a very good one.
Oh, thank you. You know, yeah, I really didn't prepare myself to say much about it today, but I wanted to.
For your, what they call, Konferenzschaltung, your conversation via Skype to discuss a problem and to have representatives from as many countries as possible to give, let's say, a situation of the, a description of the situation of a special country. For example, the British situation is different from the Spanish one, the German one, the French one, the Austrian one. And I was told by a friend in Italy that the parliament in Rome is willing to vote an anti-Rusia's law. You understood?
That's the latest thing I saw, too.
Yeah. Seems to be willing to vote for the first time an anti-revisionist law.
Right. Very, very bad news. Well, you know, what I need is someone who is very computer sophisticated to get this, see, find out how to do this, to have a cyber or online conference on January 27th of this coming 2014. That's the Holocaust Remembrance Day. While they are gathered in Auschwitz, we can be gathered on our computers and joining into something. And I have one method, but I'm not smart enough about computers to know whether it would work or not. So I need somebody like that to help.
I'm only a
user. I know you're not. All the people I know are basically, we're all politically minded, but we're not very technically.
Find some specialists. I'm sure we will find some specialists.
Yes, that's what we need. Well, I'm really glad for you to put in a good word for that. And other people I've mentioned too, everybody thinks it's a good idea. Bradley Smith also is the same. He thinks it's a great idea, but he is totally in, you know, not sufficient on the computer. So it's good to get this started early, and we'll just see what we can do with that. But we have to keep moving with this. All right. Well, that leaves us with just a few seconds left now. So I want to thank you very much, Gunter.
Thank you very much for giving me the chance to speak to your listeners.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm sure they did, and I certainly enjoyed it. And what have you got coming up that you're going to be doing? Anything that you'd like to mention real quick before we – just real quick.
Just some understand reading German should contact me and give me their email address and interest even in my souvenirs of my present times.
Okay, right. Yeah, you got that book coming up. That's right, your book about your latest prison experience. So we'll look forward to that. All right, well, so thank you very much once again. And listeners, thanks for being with us. And
yes, so do I. Thank you. Goodbye.
All right. Good day, everybody.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.